Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 6th day of May, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Eric Snodgrass will be here, too, from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. He says today should be really good, tomorrow not so bad, but if you're going to plant, get in the field now, says Eric Snodgrass. We'll hear the weather forecast closer to the bottom of the half hour from him. And then we'll turn our attention to Commodity Week. In fact, a bit early today, so you can hear the whole of the program. Fantastic recording. If you don't catch it all, go to willag.org, willag.org, and listen to the whole of the Commodity Week program. Recorded the 5th day of May, our guests were Dale Durkles and Chip Nellinger, along with Dan Zwicker. And it all happens during this ag programming from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's how the numbers finished in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. May contract in the corn at $3.76, up 4 1/4. July at $3.77.5, 3 3/4 higher. And December settled up 3 1/4 at $3.84 3/4 for the new crop harvest month. March corn at $3.94 1/4, up 3.5 cents. May soybeans up 22 3/4 at $10.26 1/4. July 10.34 3/4, 22.5 higher. November beans at $10.22, up 20.5 cents. And January futures at 10.23 1/4, 20 1/4 higher. Bean oil for the day, May contract 80 cents higher at 32.81. The bean meal at 341.20, up $6.20. Wheat futures, May contract at 4.53 1/4, 1/4 higher. July, the harvest month for the soft red at 4.63 3/4, up a half. And the harvest month hard red finished the July at 4.53 1/2, 0.75 cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago, June contract up $1.25 at $120.87.5 per 100 pounds. The August at $117.97.5, up 55. And May feeder cattle at $147.70, 25 lower. August up 45 at $147.47.5. And lean hogs in the May, $76.75, down 82.5. June down 97.5 and $81.35. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. You may find all of our programming online at willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647. Or
checking in on the energies now. Crude oil for the day, June contract at $44.57 a barrel, a gain of 25 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.51 3/10 cents, or a penny and 0.8 cents a gallon higher. The price of gasoline wholesale, RBOB, at $1.49 1/2 is 0.3 cents higher. And diesel fuel trading at $1.33 6/10, that's up 0.7 cents. That's heating oil. Natural gas at $2.09 1/2 is a penny and 0.9 cents higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,662, up 88 points. The U.S. dollar is 0.105 higher at 93.885, and gold futures at $1,290.60 for troy ounce, $18.40 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the weekend. Starting tonight, mostly clear, a low of 57 degrees with a west wind at 7 to 9. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms likely mainly after 5. Otherwise, should be a good day. That according to Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, and we'll talk to him at the bottom of the half hour here. This evening, tomorrow, we'll have some increasing clouds with a high of 77 degrees, west winds at 11 to 16, gusting to 29. Chance of precipitation, again, this is after 5 in the evening, set at 60%. Throughout the evening, showers and thunderstorms are likely on Saturday night. We'll go to a low of 48, and then Sunday, a 30% chance of rainfall before 8 in the morning, mostly cloudy, and a high of 67 degrees. Sunday evening, showers and thunderstorms at 60%, more rainfall at the 60% level on Monday, and showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday as well. 74 degrees by then.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzla of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting joins us out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I am doing really well. It is a gorgeous day here. I suspect people are trying to get into the field. I was out a bit earlier and saw somebody out spraying. So whether they can get into the field and plant, I don't know. But they might want to move tomorrow for sure if they're not moving this afternoon. I kind of think they probably already are there. How about in your area?
Well, I think they're a little bit less nervous than back in your area based upon client conversations. Todd, we had some warm days here. We've had 3 days in a row now where we've been able to get into the upper 70s, have some nice stiff winds. We're going to break probably towards 85 today for a high and another nice warm day tomorrow to start out. And then the big rains come, it looks like. It looks like maybe 3 to 6 inches of rain over the next 10 days for eastern Kansas, western Missouri. But when I talk to producers, especially east of Decatur, and especially as you get east of Indianapolis, I think they're starting to get more and more nervous about this last half of planting and how the crop looks of what has been planted. I've started to hear a lot more guys digging around in fields, checking their seed if you're in Indiana and Illinois. And western Ohio guys that I've talked to haven't even scratched into the surface, really. They really haven't done much planting at all at this point, just been too wet and too cool. So I think this week is probably your last good week of planting if those models are right. And I think if the USDA doesn't throw any wild curveballs at us, maybe the trade will start to see the corn planting weather as a little bit higher priority, especially given our planting weather here and then the center west Brazil not looking at any relief from a very dry period of the last 30 days. It looks like another 10 days of dry weather down there at a very critical time period.
How quickly things can change in the United States, off to a fast and a quick start and then suddenly stalled, and it won't be long before people will be concerned. What happened in the soybeans that managed, and I don't think the weather is the reason yet today, to bring this back another 20 cents after some heavy losses earlier in the week?
No, I think you're right. I don't think they had much weather playing into this market at all this week. I think first of the week we were concentrating around, and you and I talked about this, would the meal give up first or would the outside markets give up first in terms of giving us a correction in soybeans? And the outside markets came first in the week. The dollar rallied on the idea that the Fed would maybe indeed raise interest rates in June. The crude oil fell, and with that really strong correlation still present between beans and crude, the soybeans took it on the chin because of the outside markets. But then, as we got into the middle part, later part of the week, and especially today with the jobs report coming out, it signaled maybe the Federal Reserve is not ready to raise rates. So we had a reversal. The dollar went lower. The crude oil went back up. And in the middle of this, the mercantile exchange lowered margins on bean oil. If you notice percentage gains, we were up over 4% in bean oil on the close. We settled up about 3.5%. But if you ask me, the big leader to the upside today for the new highs in the beans and turned us from a negative week to a positive week was indeed the bean oil. And I would associate that with, if you lower the margins in the mercantile exchange, you're going to be able to increase your leverage. And so that's usually indicative of a little bit more friendlier market, if you ask me.
So it's not a fundamental push. It's just because the margin was lowered?
You bring up a huge point. I mean, I heard stories and talked to colleagues in Chicago that said they're looking at better bean demand. And certainly the export sales of 30 million bushels plus yesterday is very strong and above trade expectations. But by the same token, Todd, I saw double-digit losses at river basis for spot beans. And I think the Gulf basis for beans has actually dropped about 25-plus cents this week. So I can't make an argument for stronger demand except for those export sales based upon what the basis did here at the end of the week. I still think it's more money flows and investor-led unless you're talking about soy meal. Soy meal to me is the heart of the fundamental friendliness, and this makes sense because Argentina and its bean crop, if it's 15, 16, 17% down in production, then we will have a lot less competition in the meal in the export market. So I continue to watch the meal cash prices very closely for indications that we have more upside for the soybeans.
Back in March, the United States Department of Agriculture at the end of the month released the prospective plantings report, which set the tone for the marketplace at least for a bit. That tone has changed now, and next week we will see USDA's first stab at the supply and demand tables on Tuesday, 11 a.m. WatchWillAg.org. We'll have them posted there right away. What do you expect to see on Tuesday?
I think the trade is, I'll answer that two ways. The trade is not expecting much changes in terms of 16, 17 acres because they really traded more heavily later in the week, the crop report, but it was mainly sticking with the 15, 16 crop year. And I say that because they're looking towards a billion bushel carryover in wheat, thanks to the wheat quality tour yield for Kansas being the second highest yield ever at this point, based upon the tour results. So we're heading towards a billion bushel ending stocks for 15, 16 wheat in the trade's mindset. And you notice by the bean corn ratio hitting a fresh contract high and getting the highest level since late 2014, they're still thinking ending stocks of beans are going to drop for 15, 16, while corn essentially remains the same. In fact, if you look at the 16, 17 estimates by the trade, really very few changed anything compared to the March 31st report. Now, the other way I'll answer that is USDA should start to lower the corn acreage numbers and raise the bean acreage numbers because they themselves said about 2 days after the March report that those numbers were probably obsolete because they were taken at the 1st of March. And we have gained, I think, Todd, I want to say around 15 to 20% on that bean corn ratio. I actually talked to a producer client in northern Illinois this week, and he had burned up some wheat acres with Roundup and is going after beans, and he'll lock the sales in at 30 bushels to the acre on that bean field. So I think you definitely pulled some bean acres into the mix away from corn and even away from wheat at this point. But the trade doesn't think USDA is going to say much about that Tuesday.
Given the size, as you mentioned, of the Kansas wheat crop, can corn and soybeans maintain higher levels going into the summer months?
Well, I think the beans will have difficulty, but I think you have two things that are not being priced into the corn right now. That is the lower acres, the 93.6 being outside the range of what I think is actually going to happen. I'm coming in at 92.1 on corn for what I think is going to happen and 82.85 on beans. The second thing is that center west crop in Brazil. I noticed that several key analysts in South America dropped their winter corn crop by 10 to 15%, but the trade didn't even close positive on the week. These corn closed down 11 cents on the week, so I don't think there's very much risk premium at all. If I'm right about that, and I'm right about this next thing, is I think the wheat's actually trying to put in a pre-harvest low right now. So I think we'll know that by the end of this month. And if that's the case, then you have a more open door policy, I think, to buying corn. I actually recommended livestock clients lock in their May through September corn needs at this point, half with options, half with cash. And I think this is the low end of the spectrum for the Dease corn. And I'm doing that before a report. And I'm doing that because of the fact that Kansas City wheat got within a quarter penny of its March low, which was a 2006 low as well.
So I'm going to guess no new crop corn sales. How about for soybeans?
I held steady for per bushel clients, cash-only clients, held steady at 60% of insured bushels, and for brokerage and subscribers, held steady at 80% of insured bushels. If I would have seen a violation of the 10-day moving average in the meal after today's jobs report, I would have increased those, and I am looking to do that either right before the report or right after the report next week.
Anything else before I let you go for the afternoon?
I think that'll do it. Just have a great, safe weekend, sir.
Hey, you too. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, you can always find all of our programming anytime you'd like at willag.org. In fact, if you want to go back and review what happened in the Kansas Wheat Tour, the three interviews are sitting right there on the webpage at willag.org. You get a really good idea of how much wheat is actually being produced produced in Kansas. Fewer acres, but a really, really big crop coming up. Speaking of coming up, up next, we'll get an early start on Commodity Week. It's a great program, and you should stay with us for the whole of it for the rest of the hour, if you can. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Yesterday, we recorded an extraordinary Commodity Week program, and hopefully you've listened to at least some of it, if not all of it, online at WILLAG.org. If not, don't worry. On this afternoon, hour-long program, you'll hear the whole thing. If not, you can find it again online at WILLAG.org. Our panelists for the May 5 edition of Commodity Week included Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Let's get a list of questions from each of our panelists today. Dale Durkles, I think I'll start with you. What topics shall we cover?
Boy, you know, when you look at things, you know, the bigger question that still dogs my mind is, does everybody think the bigger commodity sector really has turned from down to up this year?
Okay. And Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing?
Well, I think the main question on everyone's mind is, are we going to get another crack at corn here?
And Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting.
It's, at the end of the day, it's still about weather. And we'll see how that plays out.
Well, that seems like an odd comment from you, Dan, as we think about the cycles. So let's start there. I know you work through the fundamentals, but always looking forward with the cycles. Can you put the two of those together for me?
Well, I think in short run, I think the cycles are have a downward bias. Maybe could take us all the way through May. That doesn't necessarily mean that we go down. It's just that we may be more in a period of consolidation. But I think when you look on out as you go into June, July, August, then I got to be probably on the friendly side of the cyclical equation. But I know, you know, when you start talking about June, July, August rallies, that's pretty much going to have to be tied to crop problems somewhere in the United States or elsewhere, I guess, around the world. I do think the dollar currently is just a dead cat bounce. I think the dollar is in a long-term downtrend as we go on into a June, July low. I think the dollar may spin most of the month trying to retrace some of its loss over the past year or so, but I think it'll turn back down. So I think, I guess, from a cyclical point of view, my biases would be that May, during the month of May, commodities are going to struggle. I think they come to life again in June and July as the dollar begins to weaken again during June and July.
On the Kansas wheat tour, does it concern you that they found such a very large wheat crop this year? And does that give you any pause to think about what the weather might look like for the summer?
Well, the wheat is a strange commodity. I mean, the commercial grain trade wants to own wheat because they earn carry on that. So we kind of got a almost quasi wheat reserve that the commercial grain trade kind of likes to have a billion bushels in storage all the time earnings. So that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to go lower in wheat. But you know, there's no doubt about it. We got plenty of wheat around and it is it's going to be a competitive to corn and whatnot. But, I don't see wheat any different than probably what it has been. It may be mostly a sideways market and commercials just continue to earn carrying charges on it and pay for their old grain bins that they don't normally use. They just put wheat in it, and that's kind of been the cash cow for a lot of grain companies over the past several years.
Dale Durkles, I want to ask you an historical question based on the knowledge you've gained over the decades. Wheat, I think, was one of those crops that led the commodity markets for a very long time because it's grown so many places across the planet. In this last uptick in acreage across the planet, and even here in the United States, that would have been replaced probably by corn and or soybeans. Has its importance to the marketplace changed very much?
Well, I don't know you want to say wheat's importance to the marketplace ever changes, because it is grown so many places, not only here in the U.S., but around the world. But also, wheat's really a universal grain. We tend to think of it here in the heart of the Midwest as being a food grain, or in the U.S. as being a food grain. But when you step out into the world, wheat is really a large dominant feed grain as well. As you look last year, you know, the 730 million ton production, we used 130 million ton of that purely as feed. So wheat's kind of this universal, and so it's important, really never goes away. But when you look at the fundamental structure, no matter if you're looking at it here in the U.S. or if you're looking at it in the world, it's probably the most abundant right now. And it's really kind of put wheat in the position of really depending upon movement in the other grains to really give it strength and carry it higher. So to me, wheat used to be a leader, but I think today it continues to go to the background unless you get extraordinarily tight like we were back in 07, 08.
This brings me to the other commodities in general that would include things like crude and gold, corn, soybeans, bean meal, bean oil, palm oil. Has this sector changed from a bearish bias, and this is the question you asked, to something that's more friendly?
You know, the one thing when you look at it and looking at it broad base, and you look at the commodity indices themselves, and the one thing that when you look back at history that stands out, you tend to have a couple of cycles, a 3-year and a 9-year cycle pattern, low to low on them. And actually, we moved into the early part of that window right at the end of spring a year ago, or maybe last summer. And so when we actually saw the bottom in January, we were getting towards the end of that window. But when you look at the action out of the low that we put in January that we've had across the indices themselves, you really do get to feel that the bigger commodity trend has shifted. That kind of goes hand in hand with what Dan was saying about the dollar as well. And when you look at the dollar, to kind of reinforce what he's saying, it's also, interestingly enough, got a 3-year pattern to it. And it has a low due out somewhere in the middle part of 2017. So I agree with what he's saying. We may be having some strength and it could continue for a while, but the dollar probably generally is going to lose some ground. In the short term in commodity indices, though, we have a semi-annual cycle, and that bottoms around July 1. So it may be that any big gains that we're going to get to the upside in commodities may end up coming after that instead of before, which kind of fits into what Dan was talking about, too, albeit June may not be a very exciting month.
That, of course, is Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. He was joined on our May 5 edition of Commodity Week by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Bloomington, Illinois. When we come back, our agricultural programming will continue. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass of Agrible.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Crepe Suzette Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1833, Illinois blacksmith John Deere developed the first cast steel plow. Deere's plow was made of wrought iron and had a steel share that could cut through sticky soil without clogging. Deere's first steel plow sale was to a local farmer named Lewis Crandall. It wasn't long, though, before the plow was in huge demand. By 1855, John Deere's factory was selling over 10,000 steel plows a year. The steel plow made Deere a millionaire. In 1851, John Glory patented an ice-making machine, the first U.S. patent for a mechanical refrigerator. Although the mechanism produced ice in quantities, leakage and irregular performance sometimes impaired its operation. Glory is considered by many the father of refrigeration and air conditioning. And in 1898, Daniel Gerber of baby food fame was born, but it was actually his wife, Dorothy, that was the genius behind prepared baby food. In 1927, she encouraged her husband to hand strain solid food for her 7-month-old daughter, Sally. After several evenings, Dorothy suggested to her husband that the work could easily be accomplished at the Gerber family's Fremont Canning Company. The rest is history. A year later, in 1928, strained peas, prunes, carrots, spinach, and beef vegetable soup were ready for the national market. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass joins us from Agrible. A lot of ground to cover, Eric. Let's start out west, where they've got some really big fires. You suggested to me earlier that this might have some potential impact on weather for some time to come.
Yeah, so there is some large fires in Alberta, Canada right now. So far, burning around 330 square miles. Now, that number sounds huge, but remember, that's about a third of the size of Champaign County. But still, this area had a big lack of snow for their winter. So without that snow, plus 10, maybe even higher degrees above average winter, means that they're dealing with really, really dry conditions and, of course, these fires. And we're going to have to deal with it here, I think. Some of the smoke, the plumes of smoke might kind of spread out and get thin, but may degrade our air quality across a big chunk of the United States as the weather kind of flows that direction. And we think about all of this because we try to look for connections between weather events that are happening, you know, this time of year versus, you know, how well our crops will do later in the year. So, you know, we've been off to a pretty darn good start with our planting and planting progress. Soil temperatures have been warm. We've had several long stretches of dry days followed by some decent rains. While it's been wet across the Great Plains, you know, the eastern parts of the Corn Belt, and actually most of the Corn Belt, has done pretty well for this planting progress. So what we look for here is we're like, okay, what's some of the longer term pressures? Well, we see the collapse of El Nino. El Nino is on its way out. For the most part, that part of the Pacific Ocean, the equatorial Pacific, is back toward its neutral condition. Just a little bit of a warm anomaly stuck in the very middle of the equatorial Pacific, but really we're starting to see signs of La Nina along the coast of South America. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of share with you what April needs to look like in order to get big yields in Illinois. So first, you know, our weather tends to come from the west, right? We know this. So we need to look out west. And if you want to have a year with great yields, we need to have cool temperatures in Alaska and then warm temperatures across the North Central Pacific. And what's interesting is that this year we don't have that. The North Central Pacific has actually got a large cool anomaly in it. And then Alaska has been very, very warm. They're actually on pace for their warmest year on record so far. So this to me says, okay, some stuff downstream of us appears to be not in the best configuration for high yields. Now, I'm not calling for a massive drop in yields, but that's at least something that's a lot of whack. So we got to be watching out for this as time moves forward. Good news, though, the Great Plains have been wet. And generally, when they're wet and warm in April, which is what they were for the most part, we tend to do okay with yields. So we're kind of just watching both areas very closely. When we kind of take this toward the shorter term stuff, like what do we have to deal with right now? You know, I'm thinking that if you're not in the planter today, get in it. Because if you've got anything left to plant, Friday is going to be beautiful, highs in the mid to upper 70s. But then really Saturday, Sunday, some storms try to move into our area. You're going to get through most of Saturday dry here in Illinois. But a band of showers tries to move in from the northwest, and there might be some embedded thunderstorms in that could be potentially strong to severe. So we have to look out for that. And then, of course, we got Mother's Day on Sunday. And if you're in the Great Plains states, from Texas to Oklahoma to Kansas, the Storm Prediction Center says, hey, we've got ingredients coming together to make the potential for some severe storms. That's all going to move to the east with time, which means the start of next week looks wet. So we're talking about a pretty big blanket of a half inch of rain, some locations well over 2 inches. So like I said, if you're not in the planter right now, get out there and get it finished up.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric. Eric Snodgrass, of course, is with AgriBolt, joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now let's continue with the May 5 edition of Commodity Week. You might recall that our panelists include Dell Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. When we left Commodity Week last, we were just about to ask Chip what he meant exactly by getting another crack at corn.
Yeah, and I think to tie this all together, the great discussion on wheat and the cycles, I think the short answer is yes, for a lot of those same reasons. The funds, for whatever reason, I think part of this is cycle-related, like Dan was talking about. There is a lot of money, in my opinion, rotating out of the stock market and world equity markets. And where are they going to put the money? They put it in a bank. They're going to get negative interest rates in more than half the world. They're buying stuff that's cheap, and commodities are on sale right now. And so I don't think that the funds who wrote a big short position in corn for the better part of a year, they have a huge short position in wheat. They're kind of at the point of diminishing returns there. So I think, yes, we are going to get another crack at corn. And my only question is, it's not going to be easy. I think we will get a crack up towards 415 to 4.25 December. The question is, what do you do when that happens? Because this bean market is fresh in everyone's minds. And if there's any little spark and the funds and speculative money has a reason to buy corn, 415 may just be partway into this rally. So, I think right now is the time to be doing a lot of planning on, what levels you want to sell, how you want to sell it and protect, revenue. But absolutely, I think we're going to get another crack at this thing, and there may be quite a bit of excitement left in this commodity space, in particular our grains.
The last week of April, Darrell Good, in his weekly outlook, very clearly said to producers, you need to have a plan of action in place to pull the trigger on some sales this summer. You thought a little bit about that as well. What is the plan then, Chip, that they need to have in place?
Well, I think it varies. I don't know that there's one set plan. I think it varies by operation, depending on your risk tolerance, how much storage you have, when you need cash flow, when you typically sell that grain. I think it's a different answer for every operation. But I do think that I agree with what Darrell's saying. You need the plan. And that may include, layering some offers on some cash sales or some hedge to your ives. Maybe that's buying puts at certain levels above the market. Maybe it's a minimum price where you're selling and attaching a call. I think the plan is different for every operation, but I think the important part is that you do have a plan.
Now let's deal with the bushels for corn that would have to go to the elevator. What's your plan?
At the moment, my bias is still to be somewhat patient, interestingly enough, and I realize this puts a lot of people under the gun, but when I look at the performance of the broader commodity sector, when I even look at the corn market itself, and Dan could address and talk about cycles there too, I think the thing that we have to acknowledge this year, and admittedly it came differently than people expected, the bean market shocked everyone. But if you had a grip on cycle parameters in beans, you had a step that kind of told you there could be something getting ready to happen, maybe not quite as dynamic as what we've seen, but something getting ready to happen. And I think the same thing's playing out in the corn market at this point. I think the early April low that we put in place on nearby corn futures was still a real valid low for a lot of different reasons. And I think if there's going to be something happen, I think it's going to be a surprise to the upside. So I'm still basically of the attitude I want to have some patience. I think I'll get a chance to sell some D's corn maybe up around 4.25, if not more.
All right, Dan, the pitch is in your ballpark.
Well, this is the event. So mark it down. If I'm right, I'm going to be a hero. May 20th, mark that. That's a full moon. And if you go take a look at your 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day weather forecast, it's calling for below normal temperatures. So due to low sunspot activity, I think there could be a frost scare that may have a lot of people scratching their heads. So that's the one I'm watching. It's 15 days out yet. I do know that. And anything can happen. But when you have low sunspot activity, and the weather maps are starting to point to a cooling period of below normal temperatures around the full moon, I think you need to fasten your seatbelt. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a frost all the way down the Ohio River Valley, but any kind of late season frost like that would definitely have people scrambling to buy their shorts back. How about that one?
All right. Well, there we go. We've got that one marked down. I actually put it in my calendar. It's on the website now, under the calendar, on the calendar event. I think, yeah, it will be on because it's in my travel calendar.
Well,
it's
yeah,
on the WILL website. So it's there. It says, Wicker says,
watch.
Freeze May 20th.
Yeah.
I'll put frost watch.
I've been on this cool weather kick ever since the beef house, and everybody's been talking hot weather, and I think you got cool weather up there because it's only 80 down here in Texas, man. It's supposed to be 90 now, and we're 10 degrees below normal. We enjoy this, man.
You know, going along with that, Todd, the other thing that's kind of still flying under the radar is still the second crop corn up in Brazil. And you know, up there we're getting in the northern areas some spotty shower activity, but nothing great. And you know, people aren't quick to write that crop down. You know, everybody looked at the IMEA, that's state Mato Grosso agency, last week and looked at acreage and went, well, it's up, but their estimate on yield was down 16%, and that's a lot deeper drop in terms of yield for that crop than what CONAB, the national agency, has been putting into the mix, and the bulk of your second crop corn is up in those northern areas. So, you know, you put something on like a light scattered frost like Dan was talking about, and about that same time we're going to start hearing more about, you know, that corn up in the northern parts of Brazil. It could turn into something pretty dynamic at that juncture.
So on the Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, and this one's up on the website, and I posted this to the Twitter feed as well, Mike Tenora called it a severe drought in some of those second crop growing regions, Goiás in particular, but spreading northward from there. And so he termed it as a severe drought at this point in time. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Okay, Dan, I'm going to come back to you on the cycles again. So we have your frost, but where do your cycles say we're headed?
Well, the cycles, like I said, they're just a tool. And, you know, my biases was that we would put in a late spring, you know, a late March, early April low, and then I thought the cycle was in position to kind of drive higher. I'm not necessarily going to put any prices on it, but I think it'll be hard to kill this market, you know, until you get on into that August-September timeframe. So I guess that tells me there's going to be weather issues somewhere along the line. But the other thing I stay up late at night and visit with my exporter global traders in Singapore, because that's their morning. So, but if you visit around to any export trader, they are very, very excited about moving a lot of corn and soybeans out of the United States in this 16-17 crop year. Now, one of the and it's all because of the shrinking South American supplies, and you know, everybody has an opinion or an estimate, but some of the numbers that I've heard from the exporters are quite friendly, that would be friendly toward prices. The problem that we got right now is I think there's been so much farmer selling on this rally that we had, which this is what they were waiting for. But that has end users, domestic end users, pretty well have got their needs covered through the summer. And I want to be a bit surprised if the commercial grain trade, now this may include country elevators, but I think the carryover is actually owned by commercials, and or they're eventually going to get it, the exporters, the processors, because there's no carrying charge in beans, so the country elevator that has it is going to move it, you know, on into the bigger ABCs and the small and the lowercase C ABCs, and they will be getting that ready for export. And the key is does China come in during August, September? And I think a lot of people are betting that China's going to come in. And that's when you're going to see export activity really take off, I think, is in late summer, early fall. And that could be a key driving force. But right now, the commercials pretty well got swamped with grain on this rally, both corn and soybeans. Now, farmers, I think, still probably own too much corn, but I think the beans are pretty well gone, and that's why we're at $10 rather than $9. So, but I think you're going to see exports. And see, you've already seen the export activity pick up, but I think that's just the beginning of it. I think that's just a warm-up. I think it's going to get quite hot as you get into late summer.
Chip Nellinger, he mentioned carryouts, 445 million bushels at this point from United States Department of Agriculture for soybeans at the end of this marketing year. Next week on Tuesday, USDA will release the next set, and it will include the first supply and demand tables for the coming marketing year, or the 16-17 crop, the one that's being put in the ground right now. Which of those numbers is going to change very much? Do you think that 445 is good, or will it shrink up, and will it all be in the hands of elevators, as Dan says?
Yeah, no, I think it could shrink up a little bit. Our exports have been very good. They've held up very well through this period where typically, you'd see South America and Brazil take over as a leader. They have, but we haven't seen the big hit to our exports. They slowed down some, but they've come roaring back. And I think that's part of the what we talked about earlier about maybe the crop being not quite as big in the southern hemisphere. So, you know, I think the other thing that's maybe caused some selling pressure is we're going to get the first look at new crop supply and demand tables. They use a trend line yield. They use the March 31st acreage number. It's going to be big on both corn and beans. It's going to be way over 2 billion bushels on corn, and it's going to be a big number on beans. And I think that's causing a little bit of this sell-off that we've seen the last 2 or 3 days. And it's one thing to write it on paper and see it. It's another thing, though, to get to the growing season and realize a huge crop. So, you know, I'm with what these guys are saying. I think you got to be looking. Don't panic on this break. We're going to have opportunities. Corn option volatility is historically very cheap still. So there are some real bargains out here on corn calls, not so much on bean calls, because we've gone through the volatility of this rally, and it's really expanded option volatility. But corn and wheat option volatility in the toilet right now, that means options are cheap. And that may be part of that plan that we talked about earlier, not for everybody, but that's something I think that needs to be closely considered right now.
Dale Durkles, what are you penciling in for both old and new crop carryouts for corn and beans?
For what the USDA will say or what I think they'll be?
Both.
The USDA, you know, that's always a nightmare. Yeah, they have to use the acreage numbers from the end of March. Other than that, all bets are off. You know, they can do things or whatever they want to with the demand estimates. And they don't necessarily have to use the trend line yield either. But I penciled down a corn carry out that they might show next week around 2.2 billion for corn. And on beans, I'm down around 410 or 415, I think. And that's just understanding where the USDA typically starts. In the end, though, I really think in the pit of everything, we're probably going to have new crop bean carryouts well down into the threes. And I think the corn itself, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't flirt somewhere around 1.5 to 1.6. I think all of this coming together in terms of weather, and, you know, I know you talked to Mike here a week ago, you know, and it's not only concerning the weather down, what's happening in Brazil right now and dryness up there, but this La Nina continues to fade and fade fast, or the El Nino, pardon me, continues to fade and fade fast. And, you know, that leaves us with a lot of weather risk going forward. And you go back, and the one year that was somewhat like this year in terms of the fade of the El Nino was the winter of 82-83. Spring of 83 tended to be a little bit on the wet side. You know, planting was a little slow, a little draggy, not necessarily really bad. When we got into June, it finally stopped raining, and when it stopped raining, and it turned blisteringly hot, too. So, yeah, I just see the bigger picture telling me there's a lot of risk of this thing turning around and really racing, and, you know, I take to heart what the beans have done, and I think to be complacent about the corn and not thinking something like that couldn't happen, I think is a little foolish.
Probably important on the 1983, and this number comes up, or year comes up a lot anymore as an analogous years, to remember that that was the year of the whole farm set aside. So the USDA figures on that one are going to be skewed pretty heavily by where those acres, and I don't have any idea where the acres were set aside, but in a lot of places. So trying to bring something out of USDA figures that might help you decide what's happening this year will be difficult, I would suspect.
Not if you look at the yield parameters, because that was a drought. And that was a drought that was as bad as the 88 drought when you look at it from a relative sense, yes. And it was hot along with it. If I go back and I go from, let's say, 168 bushel yield on corn back to, let's say, even down to 160, you know, I take 600 million bushel off the corn production just as a flat fell swoop, and I'm going back to where I'm at a 1.6 carryout. And if I take 8 bushels off, that's 5%. Classic drought is 10%. Then you start going down into the 150s. You know, that's why I say it's forget the acres. It's the weather that you have to watch. And Dan brought that up, too.
And it doesn't actually have to happen. It's just the market has to fear that.
Yep.
To get a really nice opportunity to get some sales on the books.
One observation, watching the market all these years, is approximately about every 10 years, everybody gets taken to the cleaners for missing the market. 1996 was the year of the famous July 240 hedge for the 97 crop year that never worked. And actually, a couple of grain companies went broke over that deal. That was the hedge to arrive fiasco. The jump in commodity prices in 7 and 8, there was a particular grain company that was pushing bin contracts with a commitment of 3 years of corn. And again, that was when everybody thought corn was never going to go above $2.40. Okay, we're 10 years away from that again, or 30 or 20 years away from 96. So now all of your grain companies, your uppercase ABCs and your lowercase ABCs, are all out promoting derivative-type contracts to farmers, whether they're accumulator contracts or minimum maximums and averaging contracts. And I think since they're all in the same business, I look for that to blow up in everybody's face, whether or not it's going to be this year or next year, but I think that's going to blow up in everybody's face. So that's something I'm also watching here for 16-17.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I've seen a lot of that myself, and I agree that lower prices have bred a lot of complacency out here, and those premium offers and, you know, anything to get some extra premium out of the crop is getting more popular, and I'm not sure if it's the year for it. So I agree with Dan 100%.
Final words from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
You know, I think people need to step back, you know, and everybody likes to look at the markets and talk about risk reward. But, you know, the thing that often gets missed in the fray there is the word reward or opportunity. And to me, you know, if you were playing the game and looking for opportunity to come, if you knew the cycles like I watch them, Dan watches them, you saw some things that could be turning positive, and opportunity was certainly there in the beans. And I think there's going to be an opportunity to see some better prices of corn. So I'm being kind of patient.
Dan Zwicker.
I continue to be in the camp that Washington will not be able to stop printing money. I think they're just going to print money. You know, the Puerto Rico bailout's coming. The bailout to Illinois is coming. The bailout to California is coming. The bailout to New Jersey is coming. And I guess, will go along with this whole premise is that we're going to see major currency devaluations. And I think people want to own real assets. And I think that is, you know, we're starting to see that. And I do think that we're basically in that mode. I think a lot of world traders are looking for that because politicians can't do anything, and it's easier for them to just print money.
And Chip Nellinger.
Yeah, I agree with what both you guys said, and I'll go back to the plan. Have a plan, and big part of that plan includes knowing what your total cost of production is and what you need out of the crop, because if you don't know that, then you're kind of shooting in the dark. So I think now is the time to not panic, realize we're likely going to get another opportunity, but have a plan in place so that you can capture some of the upside but still lock in profitable levels, because this most recent bean market showed it's impossible, even for guys like us that have been in the markets for a long time. Nobody can tell you where the high or the low is coming exactly, and you want to have that opportunity and use the volatility to put it on your side. So have a plan. I can't underscore that enough this year.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You may find and listen to the whole program anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is WILL AM 580, WILL FM 90.9, HD3, Urbana.